Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Looking to get out of the ads and back to the story? Fable and Folly Plus is a new way to support the creators you love. The podcast you're listening to right now, and more than 60 others, can be heard ad-free for as little as $4 a month by visiting fableandfolly.com/plus. And now, you'll start to see Fable and Folly Network shows are offering bonus content to all existing and new supporters. Find exclusive new episodes from shows like Where the Stars Fell, The Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program, and Civilized. Plus, early access to new episodes of Midnight Burger, all still entirely ad-free. The Fable and Folly Network supports creators of exceptional audio stories, including the one you're listening to right now. If you love our shows, we want to hear from you. Complete our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey. This will help us learn more about you, what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and how we can maintain an inclusive, safe atmosphere. As a thank you for your participation, we have extras and behind-the-scenes content from your favorite shows. Fans make the network what it is. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait to hear from you. Find our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey today.
Hi, I'm Ryan LaPlante, and I'm one of the crazy founders of Dumb Dumbs and Dice, the production company that's made the video you're watching or the podcast you're listening to right now. Now, we're clearly busy. We're producing 4 weekly podcasts: Dumb Dumbs and Dragons, Blood and Syrup, The Mythos Mysteries, and Warhammer 40,000 The Valentine Heresy, as well as 4 event podcasts with mini-series releases at staggered intervals: Curse Code and Crown, Dumb Scum and Villainy, One Shots, and the bad movie review show, Garbage Town the Movie Podcast. But we want to take this time to invite you to become a part of our company and a part of our Patreon at patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. You can get access to our Discord, access to exclusive DM and character chats. You can get the chance to name characters in our shows. You can even become a recurring NPC and hear yourself interacting with our characters each week through the voice of Tom. You can become a patron for as little as $1, and there's great value for you at even that level. So please join the Dumb Dumbs and Dice family and help us make even more content in a way that you are guaranteed to love. That's patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. DUMBDUMBDICE. So let's do something dumb together, and thanks for being part of our stories.
I am Executron, god of merchandising, and I came into existence because Dumb Dumbs and Dice has its own merchandise. That's a god pun. Get it? Dice? Merchandise? Anyways, you can get t-shirts, hoodies, spiral notebooks, clocks, wall art, throw pillows, bags, and even stickers emblazoned with your favorite Dumb Dumbs and Dice characters and their catchphrases. Go to redbubble.com/people/dumbdumbdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. One more time for the mortals in the back. redbubble.com/people/dumbdumbdice. Get your merchandise today.
Welcome back, children of the night, to Blood and Syrup, a Vampire the Masquerade live play podcast. I am your host, Count Vlad von Lestat, drinker of blood, keeper of the chronicle, and all around a spooky dude. The Cotri are awaiting their audience with the prince and had a few minutes to catch up. Newly in charge, Iris asked what other lines they should draw during the negotiations. Ridley found out Iris knows Everett's secret and demands to be let in on it, and Everett finally reveals that he eats other vampires. Abandon hope, all ye who listen here.
Everett Fry's words ring loud in the small, sort of silent tiled bathroom. The words, "I eat vampires," accompanied by a loaded revolver, land on both of you. Now, admittedly, Iris, you already knew this was the case, but Ridley, this is the secret you've been angling for so very long. What do you do?
I continue to speak and say, you need to decide whether you're going to kill me now or not.
Well, I mean, wait, we've all eaten a fucking vampire. We all ate, well, it's his fucking name from the school. We've all drank
vampires exclusively, Ridley. That's my prey, is you. You and Iris and all the other vampires you may or may not care about or come to care about. That's my food.
Just let me wrap my head around this one. So,
yeah, let me help you wrap your head around that. It has been made pretty clear to me that that is basically grounds for immediate execution within the Camarilla, any kind of real vampire organization, as I understand it. And now you have this anchor around your neck, my insatiable hunger for vampire blood. So either pick up the revolver and put me down like the ravenous dog I may turn out to be, or, like you mentioned earlier, does knowing my god-awful secret all of a sudden make you trust me now? Because you've got something on me. That's what it took, right?
Everett, you're a fucking moron. Do you know this? Well, I mean, do you get bloodbound to people if you've been drinking from the same vampire? You drank some of what's a fucking name that we kept in a box. Did you fall in love with her?
No, I fucking ate her, Ridley.
Listen, you're getting real fucking preachy. Let's just tone it down or we can figure this out. So if you don't get bloodbound and you fucking need to drink vampire blood, you should have told us this way long ago. I mean this in the nicest, most constructive way, but you're a fucking moron. You realize that we're vampires, right? So we can fucking drink blood from the people that we drink blood from, and we can put some blood in fucking bags that you could drink just from us. You don't fucking have to eat anyone. You don't have to slink around. You don't have to be fucking starving. We just amp up the amount we eat, and we fucking supply you.
That's unacceptable to me. I don't like you eating people either. I don't want you, so I especially don't want you eating more people on my account.
So now the theory is that we have to let you have some sort of bullshit moral stand, a man who turned a hunter into a vampire, a man who shot police officers, and a man who kidnapped a fucking baby is too good to survive, as far as I've heard. You're determined that you're going to bring us down with you because we can't help you.
If you've got a problem with the way my hunger has manifested in, yes, turning Jocelyn St. James.
Everett, I think it's pretty clear that he doesn't have a problem with your hunger.
No, I have a problem with you not letting us feed it.
He has a problem with the decisions that I'm making. A problem that tonight, I think I've realized, is I'm not always driving the bus, so to speak. So how much more times are you going to let that get us into trouble?
Well, if we give you blood from us, you drive the bus. Blood from us, drive the bus. That's the whole theory here.
And what if I get too hungry? What if I go too long and the next time I see you, I'm some kind of monster that tries to eat you, eat Iris?
Well, I mean, we live together, so I feel like it won't be that long between when we see each other.
This all feels like Band-Aid bullshit, man. It doesn't feel like a real solution. That right there, and I point to the revolver and I say, that is a permanent solution.
Okay, then shoot yourself, and I'll just toss him the gun.
Listen, guys. I feel like this is a bridge that we don't need to cross right now, especially with a snap judgment. I feel like that there are plans and methods that we can put into place to make sure you don't get that hungry.
Well, it sounds like you two have this well in hand, and I should have just...
We're pretty resourceful. We can maybe, create some kind of snack pack that you always have around.
A snack pack.
Well, it's worked for her. She's got, that fucking guy down there the hallway who's making me my murder gloves. You know, she's got Emily. She's got the soda stream shit. She's fucking creative when it comes to blood. We just got to get it from ourselves.
Fine. If you think it's going to work, go ahead. I don't know. I don't care.
Do you trust us at all?
I'll pick up the revolver and I'll holster it. And I'll leave without answering the question.
And I mean, Iris, is it weird that he brought us into the bathroom for this? After outside, I said, what if we agree and just murder everyone who's a part of this organization? I feel like that was a big statement to make in public. And this one is sort of comparable, not less, not more. I'm worried about him. I think he might shoot himself.
And you gave him back his gun.
Yeah, because I can't fucking prevent him from doing it. Like, if he wants to do that, what am I supposed to do? Fucking tie him up and put him in a corner? We've put vampires in a box, and we agreed after a certain point that's just immoral. Right now, I'm hoping he makes a better choice. Because we can't fucking make him do it. His problem right now is he doesn't want to be a vampire, and he fucking never did. And he does horrible things as a vampire. He's no better than either of us, but he's so full of fucking shit that he fucking refuses to acknowledge where he is.
Yeah, you're right. So is there kind of some sort of vamp therapist we can send him to? Because he needs to come to terms with the fact that he's a fucking vampire.
Well, I mean, here's our problem, which is any vamp therapist will hear all of his thoughts. And we know that this organization of vampires is probably not the one we work for. And we know that the Bouchard brothers, instead of helping Emily, turned her into a fucking werewolf, so they're not reliable. How's your therapy skills? I feel like you're a good talker.
I feel like the best bet would be to send him to a human therapist, because he's not going to want to eat them. And at least he can talk about his issues in a thinly veiled... We can give him, like, something... that's not vampire. Like, I have OCD.
So what if you make a human therapist become part of your, like, herd of little helpers so that they love you and they won't betray us and then they can treat, you know, him?
It's a possibility, but I mean, they're going to have to... I don't really want to take an innocent person and...
What if we find, like, a shitty, crooked therapist, someone who, like, sells drugs on the side or something that won't affect him, but then there's someone that I can eat if they become a problem?
It's not a bad idea.
It's going to be some sort of criminal therapist we can fucking find.
Yeah. All should right. We tell them about this plan or just do it?
I think we should probably just, you know, we need to find the therapist. We need to narrow that down. And then we can talk to him about how maybe he should see one. And we've got like a suggestion. We could give him a card and he can make a call.
Seems like the healthy course of action.
Yeah. Otherwise, he might find his own therapist. And then I'm worried that he'll kill them or kidnap their baby or something.
But we're committed to like helping him.
Yeah, fuck, I was committed to helping him in here. He's the one who's like, well, you need to kill me or help me.
Well, he's being a big whiny baby.
He's like, you can't help me. You have to kill me. Otherwise, shut up and I'll kill us all, which does not seem like a reasonable expectation of friends.
Anyway, now that he's calm, we need to put a pin in this and deal with the other crisis that we're dealing with. Okay?
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, it's cool if he knows I can't fucking read. I don't give a shit. Oh, it's just okay. A weird thing to try to bring up in conversation after a certain amount of time.
Cool.
Everett, as they're chatting, you are out amongst the crowd. What do you think you'd be doing?
I need some air, even though I can't breathe. Like, I can't benefit from it.
Fair enough. So you step outside onto the street. The two Bruja guards who are standing there, armed with, like, automatic weapons, kind of nod to you and just kind of open the door. There is chaos in the streets of Montreal. There's a joy in kind of popping out for a smoke, to kind of get away from everything. But unfortunately, the smoke that is, in the air right now is that of, collapsed buildings and mass chaos. Given the kind of downtown location of the Centaur Theater, it's not like there's cars whipping by, but there's definitely, you can hear, gunshots in the distance, sirens kind of at every angle. There's helicopters overhead. The city's become a war zone. I think for you as a lawman, there's something incredibly surreal about this, because this is one of those things that I think people kind of claim doesn't happen in like Canada until it happens in Canada. And I mean, Quebec actually does have a bit of a history with this, with the FLQ. So it is a bit surreal, but also I think brings home the fact that there are stakes to the vampire world's fight with the Inquisition that weren't immediately apparent. The fact that the Inquisition is willing to level buildings is a little concerning, to say the least. And I think much beyond what you, as someone who admittedly was like planning to hunt vampires back in the day, Like that is much further than I think you would be willing to go. What's going through your head as you kind of observe this scene of terror and chaos?
Why am I here? You know, I lived a life and I died and that should have been it. And I was brought back for fucking what? This is all someone else's ambition made manifest. This is all other people's plans and wants and desires. And I was dead. I was dead. And now I'm back and I don't know what I want. And what should, am I alive? Like, am I alive right now? Kind of just getting like real, like he's spiraling.
Yeah, no, I understand. Okay, can you go ahead and roll me a resolve and let's go with awareness, please.
200.
Or insight. I'd say you could also go insight if you want.
And awareness or insight. I don't know if it makes a difference. Oh, it does make a difference. Let's go awareness. Three successes.
Okay. So as you start to spiral, Everett, I think you briefly, your mind shifts and you kind of almost can't help it. But as you're spiraling, kind of your subconscious is working away at what it's observing. You're seeing the chaos, you're seeing the, anarchy basically that's been unleashed. And as you are getting real metaphysical about your own existence and the nature of life and everything else, there's a puzzle that's ticking away at the back of your brain. And with that amount of successes, I'll say your conscious mind is able to kind of grasp it. But Ridley earlier stated that based on the text message, the Camarilla here must be false and the Camarilla that you've been sent by must be true. But as you're thinking about what your purpose is and other people's designs, it occurs to you you're not actually sure if that's true. It could be, but as
that role is to keep me from spiraling, that's not a good idea to pop into my head.
Yeah, man, look, I'm just giving them what you got. It's not like you have like a fucking, you know, support animal you can go hang out with who will calm you down. But as an investigator, I do think a puzzle is something that might ground you slightly. And so the grounding question isn't whether or not this is all a lie or what you've been told is a lie, but just that something you're missing some facts. And as is Ridley and to some extent Iris's way, they've kind of driven pretty far ahead under the assumption that, yes, okay, what we have believed is true is true. But as an investigator, you actually don't have enough evidence on either side to really be able to weigh that. The Bouchard brothers piece doesn't fit right now. Nor does necessarily what the purpose of turning you would be. So all that to say, as an investigator, there is a case that could perhaps draw your attention. That said, having the only thing that at least you thought you knew come under scrutiny is also concerning. So I don't know if that solves anything for you, but I would say from my side of things, the only thing I can think of in this particular situation, this particular moment that might give Everett pause is an unsolved case. And currently this is that, but
all right.
He's your character. So I leave it up to you.
A memory pops into Everett's mind very vividly in this moment. And it is some extremely grim advice that he didn't necessarily take or agree with at the time, but feels applicable now all of a sudden. I think with enough stains on his humanity, it makes more sense. A more seasoned of a veteran detective once gave me the advice that when dealing with a sophisticated killer in your investigation, sometimes the only way to solve the case, to identify and catch that person, is to wait for more bodies to show up. Is to wait for them to continue killing, wait for them to make mistakes, wait for them to leave more evidence. And with the idea of like having to wait for more murder, before gaining clarity, I think Everett just kind of, I think he just says, fine. And he goes back inside and joins the party.
Great. The guards nod to you as you come back in. Ridley and Iris, would you, I assume you would have left the bathroom after your conversation concluded. So you're kind of back out on the floor. So you will be called in to see the prince shortly. The only other sort of hanging lead was when you first arrived, you were told to seek out Jacob Kane, that he might have information for you. Would you want to do that before or after you speak to the prince? And I believe, Everett, you were told this?
I think I was there pretending written. To be like her, not pretending, but like being her like attaché, being her mm-hmm. assistant for that piece. So I recall that information as well, but I don't know if I've rejoined you two yet or if this is a decision being made kind of while I'm outside.
I think this is as you've walked back in. So I guess actually that's a good question for you, Tyler. Do you think Everett would rejoin them now? Is it kind of that sheepish, like, I'm just going to like shuffle up near them and not necessarily address anything that's just happened?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anybody else, so I might as well go back to them just now that I've kind of taken a little walk.
Okay, as you start to make your way in, you feel a hand on your arm, and you turn to see Sorica. But now her eyes are a different color and don't have the doubling effect. She just says, Sorica and I were talking, and seems like you might be going through a bit of a rough patch, and trust me, if there's one thing we know, it's rough patches. Are you okay?
Sorca is your sister? I'm sorry, have we met? We have met, but you're not Sorca.
No, my name's Fiona. Sorca is definitely not my sister, because that'd be super gross. It's kind of a long story. I don't know how much you know about Tremere magic. I don't know if magic's a thing you necessarily know about. I know people don't talk about it all that much. Blood magic's kind of a weird, vaguely taboo topic. But through a tremendously strange series of events, my lover and I, we both kind of just got stuck in this body, and she kind of like looks down. She says, "Sorka's body." So I'm kind of like, I guess, her roommate, sort of. I'm renting, leasing. I'm not really sure. Squatting, perhaps. But yeah, we're both in here. It's handy that she's Malkavian, because everyone just assumes she's talking to herself. But I don't get out very often, so this is a kind of a nice moment for me. But she's pretty drained after, you know, the whole like nom 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 arm. Situation. So I'm driving the bus, as it were. But again, we're both kind of worried about you. Are you okay?
Sorry. I thought I had kind of taken in all the new and novel information that I could for one night, but I think you might have just topped the whole list there with that story about how you and Sorca came to occupy the same body. Am I okay? I don't know. No. Are any of us okay after we die and become like this? I don't know.
I'm trapped in my wife's body, so like, I get it. You know,
have a pretty even keel on things, given your situation. You're stronger than I am.
Well, I mean, we do now, but I got to tell you, it took a while. We, when this first happened, it was, look, I don't know who your sire is or what your relationship is. Sorka's is a real fucking piece of work. And it was an unpleasant road, but, you know, she made some valuable friends. And those friends, Abigail, some others, they helped us come to terms with this, figure it out. But no, there was a bad time there. But we, you know, we sought out help. We spent some time in an asylum that really helped. It was meant to be a punishment, but turned out to be actually the best possible thing. We found some real good supports there. And I mean, look, I, I came to this life from a kind of a different route. And finding out that your wife is a kindred, something you didn't think exists, and then getting fucking merged with her is a bit of a trip. So I get it. It sucks. But, you know, I watched Sorka suffer alone for a really long time. And it sounds like you need to get yourself some support, man. Like, I don't know if it's friends or a lover or someone you knew when you were human. But even then, I got to tell you, as a former human myself, none of us are emotionally prepared for what your kind go through. So the sooner you can find some help from other kindred, the better. Because we're all stuck like this. And I don't think you need to suffer more than, you know, the whole having to drink blood thing, which is really fucked up. I'm real sorry you're going through that. It's one of the few times I'm glad I no longer have a body, is I don't have to taste it, because it's, you never get used to it, or at least I didn't.
Thanks for supporting the Fable and Folly Network. Here's another show we know you'll love.
Greetings, I'm Bernard.
And I'm Magenta. You might know us from such hit podcasts as Madame Magenta, Sonus Mystica,
Horror Anthology Magenta Presents,
or Season 3 of Mockery Manor.
We're everywhere.
And we're spreading faster than an STD in an old folks' home, because now we have a brand new podcast. Wham!
Wham! It's a fun acronym that stands for We Have a Movie.
Oh, it's not just an acronym, Bernard.
It's not?
It's a chat podcast where we invent smash hit Hollywood movies based on popular toys.
If you like the Barbie movie and you want to see similar treatments of your favourite childhood toys, I'll wager you'll like Wham! With episodes on Polly Pocket, Rubik's Cube, Game Boy, Strawberry Shortcake,
Furby, Connect Four, and lots of other nostalgia bait. But it's not just for adults who still like toys. It's a podcast for anyone who loves Hollywood tropes and comedy.
And quantum mechanics.
And BDSM.
Wham! Has something for everyone, but is still specifically about movies.
That's Wham! W-H-A-M. You know, like when Batman punches someone.
Yes.
Adam West. That Batman.
Exactly.
Not the Christopher Nolan one.
No.
Download it anywhere you listen to podcasts. That's what the world needs, another movie podcast.
Was that clear? Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned quantum mechanics.
Hi there, I'm Tom McGee, and I love stories. And odds are, if you're listening to our shows, you do too. So, if you're wondering how you can help support our storytelling and world building and these wonderful characters and their sometimes ridiculous journeys, you can head on over to patreon.com/dumdumdice. There you'll find a variety of different levels and different perks, starting from as low as a dollar, which gets you into our Patreon-only Discord, where you can talk about the latest episodes, all the twists and turns, and just generally hang out with some truly lovely people. There's a whole variety of levels, with everything from advanced episodes, ad-free feeds, to, of course, at our $25 level, getting to create your very own character who appears in some of our shows and sometimes becomes a long-running friend or foe of our characters. So, if you want to get involved, if you want to help us tell more of these stories, then head on over to patreon.com/dumdumdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. And help us create more of these fun adventures together.
Dum Dums and Dice would like to welcome you into the Mythos Mysteries, a live play Pulp Cthulhu podcast where improvisers and comedians venture into dangers beyond their wildest imagining. The series features Claire Blackwood as Red, Ryan LaPlante as Adrian Diesel, and Tyler Hewitt as Old Man Richter in a world created by Keeper Tom McGee. Our story begins with two erstwhile companions on a long and winding road. They think they are fleeing danger, but greater horror awaits them when they arrive. For they are not just running away from mortal danger, but towards the Mythos Mysteries. Episodes are available now.
You might be right. I thought I was getting some help from friends earlier this evening, but we didn't agree on what help might have meant. Mm. And some people that I've cared about have really been hurt or had their lives ruined by my involvement now that I'm like this.
You see Fiona kind of put a hand to her temple, almost like she's got a migraine. As she kind of blinks it away, her eyes take on that double focus again, and in a different voice, an admittedly kind of a sleepy voice, kind of yawning, kind of shaking off the night. Sorka says, "I mean, if anyone knows how that feels, it's me. My wife got literally shunted into my body. That's a you never quite get over how bad that feels. And admittedly, you know, we've made it work, but that's the nature of being a kindred. The ones you love will get hurt. It's up to you whether or not you can live with that, and more importantly, what you can do to make it right."
I haven't thought about making it right. Thanks.
You're welcome. And, you know, if you get peckish, arms always open. Fiona's like, "That's so gross, Sorka. Don't offer our arm as a snack." And they proceed to have an adorable lover's quabble about like what hors d'oeuvres to offer as you make your way back over to the party. So the three of you are now sort of back together. How does that kind of party moment of reconciliation go? Not reconciliation like you all have to be buds, but you know, it's awkward after you have a fight with someone to just shuffle back up to them because you don't know anyone else at the party.
I don't know anyone else here.
Yeah, we know.
Ridley, in the interim, you've managed to get a coat or a shirt of some sort. What are you wearing over your burnt flesh body now?
I feel like he would have got it from one of the younger vampires, because the older vampires wouldn't really be able to trade clothes so much. I feel like he's probably got like a Montreal Canadiens jersey, like something somebody was wearing over the other parts of their outfit that he's just kind of claimed. So it's baggy. It's like way too big.
I think
he's kind of swimming in it.
Sure. And I think it's been shot several times. So it's like kind of ruined, which is why someone would be so eager to give it away. But yeah, you're wearing an oversized jersey that makes you look a bit like, you know, Kevin Smith of like 10 years ago, just massive oversized hockey jersey. At least, you know, you're not flaking all over the place now. The question remains, do you seek out Jacob Kane or do you go to meet the prince? Keeping in mind, you will have a chance to seek him out after. It's just up to you what order you want to do these things in.
I don't think I know about Jacob Kane, so I can't answer this question.
Fair enough.
Iris, do you want to speak with Jacob Kane before talking to the prince? I feel like the more data and information we have before having the big talk with the new prince of Montreal might serve you well.
I think that's smart.
All right. Who's Jacob Kane?
So they quickly fill you in on the information they received, just that, you know, person worth talking to. You ask around, you ask a couple of friendly kindred, and they point you to a man who is standing in a corner, looking at a very well-polished pocket watch that seems almost to be like a cross between a locket and a pocket watch. Like there's a photo in it, in the cover of it. He's a tall guy, short black hair, very well-kept beard. He's wearing a meticulous sort of 40s style three-piece suit. Yeah, he just seems to be kind of looking a little bit almost longingly at the wristwatch or at the pocket watch. And as you approach, he just kind of smiles at it and says, "Ah, yes, right on time." And he snaps it shut. For those of you who would be interested, I feel like all three of you are kind of inquisitive enough that you might want to inquisitive. In the case of the investigator and the mobster, nosy in the case of Iris. If you want to try and see what's in the locket, you can go ahead and roll me let's go with awareness and wits. Because this is literally just like, you know, invariably, if someone's looking at something secret, your eyes are drawn to it, and whether or not you can see it before he snaps it shut.
One success for Ridley.
Two.
Okay. And Tyler's counting up his dice.
Four successes, two tens, neither of them on hunger dice.
Ah, regular successy. That's good, because you were the only one to roll high enough to catch it. Everett, you're slightly taken aback to see a photo of Dr. Skull. Admittedly looking much more put together than you ever saw him. A little bit younger, very clean cut. And the pocket watch snaps shut. And he just kind of looks up and says, I was so very dearly hoping that you would come to see me at this particular time. It would seem to me that 8:42 p.m. is the ideal time for a meeting. Wouldn't you agree?
In Everett's brain, he just screams, Christ, it's only 8:42 p.m. Just like, what a hell of a night.
It's been a fucking rough one. And again, everything, like, that whole bar fight was probably 5 minutes. It gets dark early, sure. Yes, he kind of looks up at the three of you expectantly, and then his eyes narrow a bit, and he just says, ah, yes, I believe you might be just the people I'm looking for. Mr. DeSanti will be ever so pleased that you came.
Who now?
He kind of just mutters to himself a little bit and shakes his head and says, you must forgive me. I am bad at providing the necessary conversational context often. It is a danger of having a mind as busy as mine. Yes, Mr. Angelo DeSanti, my current employer, as it were, and a man of some renown. Tyler, Everett would definitely remember this name from the visits to the hospital when you guys were investigating what happened to Emily. DeSanti Medical is a massive sort of medical agency here in Montreal. You saw DeSanti Medical equipment everywhere at the hospital you went to. Obviously, privatized hospitals aren't really a thing up here, but his stamp was definitely all over the place. It's definitely a name you would know. He says, Mr. DeSanti is very curious to speak with you. He did not... Your incursion into his hospital was not unnoticed. Neither, I believe, was your... If it was indeed you, your toss-up at the coroner's office, both of which were... rather well documented, I'm afraid. Nevertheless, he is quite eager to speak with you. You notice he kind of gets a little, like he shuffles his feet a little bit and says, and actually, I must admit, I am as well. I do believe you may have been some of the last people to speak to my dear friend before his murder, and I would be ever so grateful if you could assist me in discovering what happened to my dear friend. I believe you knew him as Dr. Skull.
Everett looks to Iris.
We did have a couple brief encounters. He helped us out a couple times, but can't say that I know exactly what happened to him.
One of our friends was a patient in his care. So, yes, we did visit the hospital and speak with Dr. Skull, but only regarding our friend, I believe.
He kind of nods looks back up and he says, yes, but you did investigate the crime scene, I believe. Please, you wouldn't stop a vampire from avenging a friend, would you? And you see a slight flicker of flame appear in his hands around the pocket watch, which he quickly kind of like closes a fist around and sticks back in his pocket.
That's a neat trick.
It comes with a cost, but it is worth it. Huh. The magical arts are not one that all kindred are aware of, but I find them quite fascinating, as do the rest of my clan. And then he nods at Ridley and says, I believe you are familiar with the flame as well, my friend.
I've had a taste. It's not my favorite, but, you know, I feel like I'm going to be tasting it again at some point in the future.
We all do, eventually. In any case, I cannot possibly put my needs before Mr. DeSantis, but if you do find the time, I would greatly appreciate any assistance you can give me. Trust me. And he kind of pats the pocket with the pocket watch. He says, I'll always find the time, and I sincerely hope you will as well. This is where you may find Mr. DeSanti. And he hands you a business card. And he says, I believe he may be able to help with your current housing situation as well. You would do well to call him at your earliest convenience.
Why would Mr. DeSanti extend such a kindness to us?
And he grins in a almost like a Grinch-esque grin, like his mouth is alarmingly thin. He just says, our kind must always trade in favors and niceties, wouldn't you agree? Besides, based on the condition of this particular one, and he nods to Ridley, says, you might want a nice, comfortable place to recuperate for some time, I think. And I'm sure what he will ask in return will be entirely within your means to grant. It's always helpful to have friends, don't you think?
And with that, he'll kind of like, almost like his eyebrows just sort of shoot up a moment, and he reaches into his pocket quickly and says, oh dear, and immediately just like books it across the room where he plants and then proceeds to wait. And a moment later, someone does indeed walk up, and you can see his shoulders kind of relax with relief as the person meets him.
Well, all right. It doesn't really help us, I guess, with this conversation with the prince, but good to know we got a place to stay tonight.
I'm also going to tell you right now, under no circumstances will I be helping him avenge Dr. Skull.
Yeah, no. Emily killed the shit out of Dr. Skull, and I guess that's not really...
I think the key to this one is we're going to have to find someone fucking else that he can blame it on, because he's not going to go away, which means this is an ongoing threat against Emily. But right now, he's also where we're going to sleep tonight, because we actually have no other options. So, yeah, other than, I guess we could all move into Iris's place. Iris, has your place been, I don't know, a security concern in any way? I mean...
I mean, other than the fact that I just got trampled by a ton of vamps with Drac.
Oh, fuck. Okay, no. We need a new place to stay for all of us.
Something tells me Jacob Kane is not going to be so easy to fool. That pocket watch thing seems to give him insight into things. But anyway, that's a bridge to cross another time, I guess.
Okay, so we talk to the prince, we go visit Mr. DeSantis to get ourselves a new fucking place, and then we figure out how to hide Emily and feed someone who's in a very fucking convincing way to the man who wants to avenge Dr. Skull.
I'm this close to feeding him Iggy.
And with that, Sheriff of Elysium, Ryan LaPlante, arrives and just starts like violently pointing at a watch and gesturing kind of wildly. And with that, you go in to meet the prince.
This episode of Blood and Syrup features the voices of Ryan LaPlante at Ryan LaPlante on Twitter, Tyler Hewitt at Tyler_Hewitt on Twitter, Megan Miles at Maggie Miles on Twitter, and storyteller Tom McGee at McGeeTD on Twitter. This episode's sound was edited and mixed by Laura Hamstra, and all of Dum Dums and Dice's logos are by Decapitated Markers at Decapitated Marker on Twitter. That's MRKR. Our theme songs are What's Really Going On Right Now by Chase Allen Willis and Traffic by Kai Engel, and all our ads use the tracks No Control and Chiefs by Jazzar, that's J-A-H-Z-Z-A-R. All of their music is available on freemusicarchive.org. When it comes to Dum Dums and Dice, you can visit our website at dumdumdice.com. Our Twitter and Instagram are at dumdumdice, and on Facebook at facebook.com/dumdumdice. We've also got merchandise at redbubble.com/people/dumdumdice. And most importantly, you can join our Patreon of Darkness at patreon.com/dumdumdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. Sleep well, children of the night. Spooky.
Dum Dums and Dice has to give a special thank you to the supreme beings of our Patreon at this time. Christian Menicola, Long Long, The Half-Blind Prophet, James Cuellar, Charles Grams, Christopher Little, Sue One, George Dolby, One True Artistry, Orion Birchfield, Lord of Bradovic, Noel Lewis, Scott Garland, Anthony Griffin, Chet Awesome Laser, Jordan Neesmith, Benjamin V, Gavin and Abby McDonald, Taryn Hefner, and Jill and Noel LaPlante. If you want your name to be added to this list, you can join our Patreon too at patreon.com/dumdumdice. Thanks to them, and a little bit of thanks to you.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.